Welcome to Caffeine, Crime and Canines, a podcast brought to you by two girls who love their dogs, love coffee, but most importantly, love true crime.
Hello.
Hi, how are you?
I'm good, how are you?
Good. What are you doing?
I'm baking in fake tan. I've washed my hair. I've packed. I'm ready to go.
Now you are making me extremely nervous because I've still got stuff in the dryer. I've still got to wash my hair and I still need a tan. But,
you know, it's so funny. When Monkey got home today, he goes, you know, like, how are you going with getting everything sorted? And I said, I'm pretty good. I think I've got my stuff sorted. But at that point in time when he came and asked me, you're going to lose it, I was in the laundry and I was washing my shoelaces. And he was like, yes, the most important thing, wash your shoelaces.
That is so freaking funny. I feel like, I mean, I've packed majority of my stuff, but yeah, there's still a few bits and pieces, and I am definitely an overpacker. Like, we're only there for what, 4 days? I've got like 4 pairs of leggings, 4 like casual outfits, and then I've got like 3 dressier outfits. I don't know what we're doing, so I just need a
yeah. I'm the same
for everything. Like,
I've got 2 outfits per day. So yeah.
Yes. Yeah. About I'm the same. Although one is like leggings and a jumper and the other one is like a dress or like jeans. So,
I haven't actually really packed many jumpers. Like, I've got long sleeve, but I probably should put a jumper in, shouldn't I?
No, totally. I put 4.
One for each day.
Yeah.
I don't know, like, is it extra cold over there? Like, isn't it just like here, like the weather over here?
Yeah,
or is it just a bit icier?
I think it will be exactly like here, to tell you the truth. I checked it.
Cold.
It's like 20, like 19, 20, 21. It's around there, but I feel like if we're moving around, I'll be fine, but I do tend to get cold. So,
Yeah,
I just thought a jumper for each day. And then I don't know how you're going to feel about this. We'll have to update the listeners next week. But I checked and where we're staying, there's a little gym. So maybe I can get you down for a workout.
Oh, my God. Can you imagine?
On Saturday, I'm going to do it.
I'll walk on the treadmill with you.
Okay.
That's you know, good. While That's you do your thing. I'll do that.
You'll
I'll make sure
down.
I put my runners in. Yeah.
Yeah.
How funny.
Oh, I'm so excited though.
Yeah, it's going to be so much fun. I guess crime news this week. There was obviously that murder in Ballarat, the young girl that got murdered by her ex-partner, I think it was. So that's pretty crazy.
It is. I heard that Ballarat, because obviously everyone now is like all eyes on Ballarat because there's just been like horrible things happening out there. But I think that, I don't know if it's the mayor or whatever it is, the main man there came out and he's like, it's not just here. It's literally happening everywhere in Australia.
Yeah.
But obviously, you know, the fact that it's happened there the last, I guess, few months, it's put a bit of a spotlight on them.
Yeah, yeah. And this was like a domestic violence, like that happens everywhere. It's not central to Ballarat. So, that's a pretty sad one. But other than that, not too much crime news this week, I don't think.
Yeah, I've not even looked into much crime news to tell you the absolute truth. I've just been like plodding along trying to get by. So, nothing too exciting, nothing to report. I guess we could probably – well, maybe we shouldn't. I was going to say because obviously we've got the hens tomorrow night and Danny – it's going to be a surprise for Danny. But
yes.
When this drops, it would have happened. So I guess we can talk about it a little bit.
We can. That's true.
Because I have been making – so our friend Danny is getting married. That's why we're going to New Zealand. She's having a little hens on Friday night and it is Taylor Swift themed. So I've been making bracelets. Julianne's been helping me the last maybe 2 weeks. We've tried to smash out. We've made so many, Lockie. You will die when you see how many we've made. I feel like we've made definitely over 50 for sure.
Yeah.
But that's been really fun. But I feel like obviously you like need to concentrate sort of when you're making them. And with the, can I tell you, at the start, both Julianne and I, we've got very different styles. Mine were all pink. Hers were like, I feel like hers were very like to do with the songs, like on theme, you know what I mean? Whereas I couldn't help myself. I just kept picking up the pink beads.
Yeah.
So you'll definitely be able to tell the ones that I've made and the ones Julianne's made. But it was at the start, it was taking like heaps of concentration. And then we were like, because I had bought some for the Taylor Swift concert, right? And they were gorgeous, but there was no like theme to it. Like the girl that I got them off obviously doesn't have OCD, and they were random and they looked so pretty. So Julianne came up with this genius idea to make like a bead salad. Like it sounds random, right? But you literally just select the color sort of you want or the theme you want, and you pop them all in a bowl and just randomly pick them out. So that's what we've been doing the last week or so. And they're so freaking pretty. So I made you a lilac one.
Yes.
And I made myself a pink one. They're matching. So I'm pretty excited to pop them up or for you to see them. So that's what I've been, I feel like that's what I've been doing a lot of the week is just like making these bracelets.
Yeah, I did my outfit. So it's obviously like dress Taylor Swift themed, but what I'm doing is I'm recreating her outfit that she wore to the Super Bowl this year, which is like those jeans with the cutouts and the diamonds and that, because it's black, so it's more like my style. But they look so good. I'm so happy with them. I think you're going to die when you see them.
I cannot wait to see them.
So happy with how they turned out. But it's funny because Karina asked me this week, what's your favorite color? Like, I'll make your bracelet. And I was like, black or lilac.
And I replied, I'm making you a lilac one.
Yeah.
And black beads.
But yeah, so we'll obviously have to post a photo of our Taylor Swift themed outfits. But it's going to be so much fun. I actually messaged Danny today and I was like, so what do you actually know? And she's like, literally nothing.
Yeah,
she knows, but she's got to wait to be picked up. Yeah.
So good. You know, and do you know what else I did when we were at the Taylor Swift concert? And you know how you get those wristbands at the concert? I got an extra one, so I'm going to give it to Danny tomorrow night so she can wear it with her bracelet.
That's so cool.
Just a little touch there, but yes. So that's so now I can actually say what I've been doing the last few weeks, because I've been like trying to keep my mouth shut about it and even trying to get like the outfit sorted, and I got my little cowboy boots and stuff. So yeah, really excited.
How fun.
But
how
yes.
fun.
Should we get into this week's case?
Yes, I think we definitely should.
Can I just tell you something though? When I was writing my notes, this is really random, but I've got this mug from Typo, just like a Typo mug, right? And Lockie, I swear this thing, the cup, was making noises. Like there was noises coming, I'm not kidding, from the cup.
Is it like an insulated thing or is it just like a plain ceramic mug?
It's a freaking ceramic mug and it was making noises. And I don't know if it's the glue. Look, I don't know what it is. I cannot explain these noises. It's really
weird.
But anyway, I wanted to tell you that because I was creeped the F out while I was writing the notes. So,
That's crazy.
But yes, let's dive into this week's case.
Yeah, let's go.
The day she disappeared, she was out riding Commodore. She knew, and I knew without us having to talk about it, that she needed to be home by about 5.
The horse was found wandering loose around the beach and near the main highway. And at 6 o'clock, the police are looking for her and find the horse, so there's very little time for anything to happen. And you'd expect in the normal course events the missing person would be there, even if they were murdered, they would be there somewhere.
had got Comet all ready, had groomed him, had the saddle on and everything else. And then she called out, "Bye, Mum." That were bye. And I heard that through the door. And I said, "Bye, sweetheart." And that was 2:45. And at 5 o'clock, I started to feel quite anxious. And in my mind, I'd said if she wasn't home by 5:45, I was going to ring the police. So she wasn't, so I phoned the police and said, my daughter went out for a ride today and she's not home yet.
So this week we will be discussing the case of Kirsa Jensen. Now, we specifically picked this case because it is a New Zealand case and we wanted to do something from New Zealand because we're going to New Zealand. Unfortunately, it's not around the area that we're staying though, but still very interesting case.
And this is like, they've called it like the most like the biggest unsolved mystery in New Zealand's history. Like, I feel like that's what I've been like heard it called like while I've been researching it, which I think is wild.
It's crazy. And do you know what else? So for it, because that's what a lot of the articles say, when I was searching for a case to do like a New Zealand-based case, this one kept coming up. But in saying that, there's still not much coverage. Like, I didn't find much coverage on it. And for them to call it one of their biggest cases and it's just not like widely covered, I found, odd.
Yeah.
I did want to shout out, though, the Untold Stories podcast. I think it's like, you know what? Because I was like, I know this guy, and I think it's from that other New Zealand case we covered. You know that guy, and that, remember, he went missing.
The older guy?
Yes. Yeah, I can't remember what the guy's name was. Was he not on some sort of like worker?
He was like an engineer.
Yeah,
it was like a plant and he went missing at work or like on the
job. Yes.
So
I'm pretty sure this podcast does they did do a full investigation on that particular case we covered. And I'm so sorry. I feel really bad because it's actually completely slipped my mind. But they did this. This is like a smaller version of that. And I think the guy, I'm pretty sure his name's Ryan, in it was saying that he pretty much started investigating Curse's story in hopes of like investigating and telling it, but in the end they decided not to go like full steam ahead with it, so they've just put out the information that they found, which I found was quite interesting.
Yeah, I listened to the podcast and I thought it was really interesting that he was saying how, like you just said, how he was going to turn it into the next series of his podcast by investigating this case. And then right towards the end, something happened or he found something or I don't know what, but something happened where he decided to not make an investigative series. And I'm like, that is so interesting. Like, I wonder what it is.
Yeah, same. I wonder, which we will get into at the end. I mean, I think it might be something in particular, which I will tell you at the end, but I'm curious to see if you sort of got the same feeling from what he had said. So I'd love to get into it. So let's get into it. Okay. So Kirsa Mary Jensen was born on the 15th of December, 1968. Her mother's name was Robin and her father's name was Dan. She had an older brother named Michael and the family lived in Napier, New Zealand. This was a semi-rural area where her dad served as the Anglican minister at St. Augustine's Church, while her mum worked as a counsellor at the high school. In 1983, when our story unfolds, Kirsa was a 14-year-old student in her second year at Colenso High School. Kirsa was sweet yet shy. She was remarkably responsible for her age. She did well at school and hoped to attend Massey University as she wanted to become a vet. She adored animals, often preferring their company over people. I sort of love that.
I love that too.
She cherished her horse, Commodore, who she was solely responsible for. And see, I think it is a massive responsibility, like having to take care of a horse. Like, it's completely yours to take care of at 14 as well. She was a member of the New Zealand Equestrian Club and dreamed of one day representing her country's equestrian team. So that's a pretty big dream, you know?
Yeah, huge.
According to her mother, Robin, Cursor was always cheerful, responsible, and caring. Quote, "When I think of her, I think of curls and bubbles and laughter and responsibility. Generous and kind and putting others first, but so dedicated to what she wanted to do. She would have done anything for an animal." After school, Cursor volunteered at a local vet clinic and dedicated her spare time to training Commodore. She was eagerly preparing Commodore for the upcoming Hawke's Bay Royal A&P show, and this was due to take place in October of that year. On Thursday, September 1st, 1983, Cursor had planned to go riding with her friend, but when a rainstorm hit earlier that day, they had to cancel their riding date. Later in the day, the weather cleared up and the sun came out, so Cursor decided to take Commodore out for some exercise along a... I just want to say it from now. I'm going to struggle with the pronunciation for sure with a lot of these places, but I'm going to give them a go. Yeah. So she was going to take Commodore along a Watoto beach. Despite being alone, Cursor had done this many times, and although it was semi-rural, there were always people around, and the beach where she was going wasn't deserted. You could actually see it from the nearby highway.
Yeah, but it wasn't like a swimming beach. It was just like – and it was like a – like people didn't swim there or really go down there because it was quite dangerous, and it was like rocks, not sand. I don't know. Yes. I feel like that makes a big difference. It's not just like a beach where people are walking along, walking their dogs, like blah, blah, blah. It's like a pretty desolate beach.
Around 2:45 p.m., Cursor said goodbye to her mum and then fetched Commodore from the paddock next door, setting off with him. They made their way through Te Awoa Avenue and Mianeni Road en route to the beach. Passerbys spotted her riding between 3 and 3:30 p.m. and it's believed that she reached the beach around this time, so around 3:30 p.m.
Mm-hmm.
As mentioned earlier, Cursor was super responsible and always made it home by 5. She never lagged or got into trouble, so when 5 o'clock rolled around that afternoon and she didn't show up, Robin started to feel extremely anxious. Like, she was like, I can't even imagine this feeling, you know? She decided to wait until 5:45 and to not freak out, but the second the clock struck 5:45, she called the police. They took the report seriously and immediately launched a search. It was around this time police received a report about a horse found wandering around near a bridge in Awatoto. The horse was Commodore and he still had part of a rope attached to him. Knowing Cursor would never willingly leave her horse, authorities intensified their search efforts.
I think at this point as well, the police were treating it as if she had possibly gone into the water and drowned.
Yeah.
Like they were treating it just not like accidental, but like they were just treating it like maybe she was out at sea or something. Like it wasn't really that sinister at that point.
Yes, exactly right, exactly right. So they searched the area without success until 11:30 p.m. when they called off the search for the night. And Lockie, you know what I think to myself? How, especially she's 14, I can't believe, I get that it's getting dark and there's not much you can do, but imagine as like a mother or someone, do you know what I mean, that knew her and loved her. The fact that you have to wait till the next morning for the search to continue, like that would kill you, absolutely kill you.
Yeah. Yeah.
So the search did resume the next morning at 6 a.m. with investigators retracing Cursor's steps. Witnesses reported seeing her near a gun emplacement, and this is like an old World War II fortification. Now, I had no idea what the heck this thing was. I was looking, like, I saw photos, but I'm like, I don't get what it is, but apparently it's just like a sort of structure, like a strong sort of structure that they used to, I'm guessing, hide behind. Is that right? When they'd, like, go to war?
I think what it was, it looks like a bench. Like, it looks like a bench seat. But what they used to do is lean their guns up against it, I think.
Yeah, and I feel like I don't know if they hid behind it, but I feel like it was, like, a structure that they sort of, like, used for cover. I'm not sure.
Yeah. So, but, like, obviously it's from the war, but in the 80s when this case took place, it was literally like a concrete slab with a what looked like a bench seat on it.
So I think this little area, like this where this gun emplacement was a little further out than where Cursor would usually ride. Now, at the site, police found a piece of rope used to restrain Commodore before he broke free. So remember, he had a bit of rope on him. They found, like, the other half of this rope at this gun emplacement. Now, there was blood on the rope along with some fine blood splatter on the ground near the rope. And I did see, because of the size of these droplets, police thought it was, like, unlikely that it was from, like, do you know what I mean? There was a deep wound that caused this splatter. It was more like spray.
Yep. I find it crazy that the horse broke free.
I do as well. And I'm pretty sure in that, this is literally going off my memory, but I'm pretty sure in that podcast we listened to, they talk about how it was it, like, held with its tongue or something? Was that completely?
Like the rope was tied to its bit, which is the metal rod that goes in their mouth, like through their teeth. And that's where the rope was tied, which is like not normal practice when you're tying up a horse, like, because obviously
she would know that.
But yeah, crazy that he broke free. Like, I feel like, was he spooked or, you know, like, that's a lot of force to pull.
So even though there were sightings of Cursor riding along the beach until 4 p.m., by 5:20 p.m., two surfer guys spotted a girl, which was probably Cursor, walking her horse along the beach. So it's interesting that by 4:20, she wasn't riding Commodore, she was actually walking him. Other reports surfaced of a girl with a bloody nose, sparking speculation about her well-being. Near the water's edge, hoof prints suggested Cursor might have been swept away and drowned. This is what you were saying earlier. So this is what they're originally thinking may have happened.
Yeah.
This area was known for its dangerous currents. And Lockie, I don't know if you saw or you would have heard actually that apparently you only needed to be ankle deep for these rips to, like, steal you away.
Pull you out. Yeah.
And can I tell you, never, like, up until recently, I did not even know this was a thing. And I can't remember if I told you this, but it must have been, it wasn't this year. I'm pretty sure it was early last year. I had gone to this, like, a back beach near Ryak. I think it's called, like, Gunner Matter or something. Apparently it's, like, a really popular surf beach and it's beautiful, right? Anyway, I went there, me and my friend were in the water, and I'm not kidding you, the water was under our knees, and this guy comes up to us and he's like, "Girls, get out of the water right now." And we're like, "What the heck?" And he's like, "Where you're standing, someone drowned last week." Like, exactly where you're standing.
Oh my God.
And the rip is about to come in. And I was like, what? And I'm not kidding, Lockie, the water was under my knees. So I cannot even imagine how powerful this, like, these rips are.
Yeah, and they can just happen so fast. Like, there's a beach in Warrnambool, actually, where things like this happen quite a lot, where the tide comes up really quick and the force of the waves in that area is just, like, crazy. Like, so many tourists and people have died at this particular beach in Warrnambool because they've just been swept away in, like, literally in an instant.
That's so scary. That actually really scares me.
But that's what they were thinking, that she'd gone down, like they were thinking at this point she'd obviously maybe fallen off the horse and hurt her nose. She went down to the water to clean her face, and then something's pulled her in the water.
Yeah.
Like a wave, yeah.
So it wasn't until John Russell called in a tip that morning that the investigation began to shift, with police now thinking foul play might have been involved. John told police that around 4:30 p.m. the day before, as he was heading to the shops to grab some plants, he drove across Waitangi Bridge. He spotted a girl and a horse near the gun emplacement in the distance, and she was having a chat with a bald, middle-aged man. There was a white truck, ute, or van. I mean, I've seen it reported all three different ways, but it was something, let's just say, I think majority of the rest of the episode I'll call it a ute, but let's just say it's a white ute, right, parked nearby. Now, it seemed as though they were having a heated discussion or a bit of an argument, and something just did not sit right with John. So he decided to turn his car around and go back to that location to check if she was okay. And this was like, because obviously he was going over the bridge, so this was like another like 5-minute drive back to that location, right? When he arrived at the gun emplacement, the man and the white ute were gone, but Cursor was still there with Commodore. She told John that she had fallen from her horse and he could see the blood on her face. She mentioned that someone had gone to get her parents. After making sure she was all right, John headed straight home. His family and neighbors could all did confirm that he got back shortly after this. In the coming weeks, there were multiple appeals from police for the driver of the white ute to come forward for questioning. Police investigated over 800 white utes that they went on to clear, but the ute seen at the scene was never found. Police divers searched the area where Cursor was last seen, but no clues were found. Forensic experts were called to the scene, and it was confirmed that the blood at the scene and the blood found on the rope were human and likely belonged to Cursor. But obviously, this is like in the 80s. So back then, the testing wasn't as developed, so they couldn't say that it was a perfect match. They could just say that it was likely Cursor and that it was human.
Yeah.
It wasn't long before John went from being a witness to the main suspect. Police found his story strange. I think the fact that he had, like, he told them that he had, like, a gut feeling and turned his car around, made, like, an extra 5-minute drive back to her. And then also he never ended up going shopping that afternoon. He ended up just going straight home.
I don't find that strange.
Neither do I. And, Lockie, if this was around 4:30, like he said, I'm guessing the shops would have been closing at, like, 5.
Yeah, so you would have been,
yeah, exactly. If he's wasted all this time, let's just say 15 to 20 minutes max, not max, but like let's say 15 to 20 minutes and the shops are closing at 5, like are you going to even get there in time? That's not weird to me either.
Yeah.
So not only was John the last person to see Cursor alive and police couldn't find that pickup truck or ute, right, that he reported seeing, but he had a previous conviction for gang rape back in 1970 and had served a few years in jail. So obviously this is what obviously like has gotten them looking
their attention
into John, right? I should note that since his release, he had turned his life around. He was working as a gardener, orchard worker, right? And he hadn't been in any trouble recently. He hadn't even had like a speeding ticket. So it seems like he was on the right path. He was married at the time, which I know that doesn't really mean anything because there are plenty of creeps that are married. But both his wife and his neighbors backed up his timeline. So it wasn't just his wife that sort of corroborated what he said. It was his neighbors as well.
Yeah.
I read that he would have had only 20 minutes at the absolute max to have taken Cursor, killed her, and disposed of her body without anyone seeing a thing. His car was analyzed and not a single drop of blood or evidence was found inside. There was nothing at all tying him to the scene. You know what's funny though? Most articles say that, but some articles mention that they found two strands of hair in his car that potentially matched Cursor's. But again, police admitted this could have been transfer from when they spoke. I mean, there's not that much on these strands of hair, but I did want to mention it.
Yeah, I mean, he had a wife. Like, maybe it was strands of his wife's hair.
Yeah, yeah. There is, however, the rope that was found at the scene and on Commodore. So this in particular, I think, is a little sus. You see, the Jensens were sure that the rope didn't belong to them. When police looked into it, they found pollen, spores, and copper sulfate. I don't even know what the heck that is, but that's what they found. On this particular rope, and apparently it's from like orchid spray.
Yep.
And they matched these samples taken from John's car, his home, and the orchid where he worked, this spray, right? Which it makes sense because he's an orchid worker. So obviously he's going to have traces of this spray all over the place. But apparently this spray matches what was on this rope. Now, John said the rope came from an old caravan awning his boss told him to throw away. He kept a few pieces, but he couldn't explain how one piece ended up tying up Curse's horse. There was no sand on the rope, meaning it couldn't have just been lying around nearby. Like, it's not like Curse might have just seen it in that area and picked it up to tie up Commodore. Like, no one knows where she got this rope from.
But you might talk about this later on, but didn't they like go and search his house and his workplace and they couldn't match the rope to anything? So like,
yes.
Why does it necessarily have to have been his?
I think because he said that it came from an old caravan awning. Like, he's the one who said, oh, this rope looks familiar. But at the same time, exactly, like, they could not find other pieces of this rope. And not only that, but how do we know that it wasn't someone else that, do you know what I mean, used the rope? It was like from the orchid farm or wherever he was working. Like, how do we know that rope didn't come from there and someone else didn't hand it to her? I don't know. There's something just weird. I don't think the rope is that big of a deal. The only big deal about it is that he claims to have said he knows where he got it from. You know what I mean? Or he had something similar.
I also don't think that, you know, how they like found all the pollen and all that crap on it. I don't think that really says anything either, because I think in the general area you would have similar pollens and like that copper sulfate. Like, I looked into it. It's like in a lot of herbicides. Like if someone could have used it on their garden. You know what I mean? Like, it's not just general to that specific orchid that he worked at. Like, there's nothing specific.
Yeah, and do you know what else? Like, I know this sounds bad, but if it is like a little rural town, obviously they've probably all used the same sort of stuff in their backyard. Like, they're not going to – it's not like that even nowadays where you can order stuff online and everyone's got different, do you know what I mean, things that they use or different sprays they like. Everyone probably had the same stuff back then.
Yeah, exactly right.
So John kept insisting he was innocent and he felt unfairly targeted because he had stepped forward to help the investigation. And he didn't step forward, obviously, to, like, be treated as a suspect because of his past.
Yeah, but then I guess what did he expect if he had the previous conviction?
Yeah, but in saying that, exactly, like, he probably didn't even need to come forward, Lockie, and no one would have known about him. He wouldn't even be a suspect if he didn't put himself at the scene. You know what I mean?
Yeah.
So I feel like it went both ways.
I just think, like, he seriously couldn't have thought that. Like, I think obviously something really stuck with him and he was, like, concerned about her enough to go to the police, even with his past conviction. But I think that he would have to, it would have to have crossed his mind that they were probably going to ask him about that.
I agree, but I think that if he was innocent and he did see what he saw, in his mind, he's thinking, I'm going to help catch the killer or whoever's taken her. So he's probably thinking along those lines that they're going to find who did this. Not, they're not going to find anyone. They're not going to find, you know what I mean? Look, there's nothing tying me to her. So even if they do look into my past, what the heck are they going to connect? How are they going to connect me to this?
Yeah,
exactly. I've got like a solid alibi. Like I was home within a certain amount of time. Like how are they going to connect me to it?
Yeah.
So he's still done the right thing by coming forward, obviously. So the police never had enough evidence to charge John. A few years later, this is in like 1985. John confessed to killing Cursor, but he later took it back, saying to an interviewer that he had been mentally ill. I think he did like an interview on TV, right, about this confession.
Yeah.
So over the years, John visited both Cursor's father at the church where he worked and her mother at home separately. So he's visited them separately, right? Telling them both that he wasn't involved in Cursor's disappearance. John even visited one of the main detectives, asking him, quote, could I have done it? And could it have been me? By this time, he had been in a serious car accident, which many people believe it was actually like a suicide attempt.
Yeah.
His marriage had ended and his mental health was deteriorating. It really seems as though he was haunted by his connection to Cursor's disappearance and the investigation. And he did spend a lot of time in psychiatric care. And he was readmitted to the hospital after his visit to the detective.
I mean, like, it ruined his life, really.
For sure. For sure. 9 years after Cursor went missing in 1992 and 4 weeks after John was released from the mental, I should say from mental care, John committed suicide by hanging himself. He left no suicide note. I feel like the main debate in this case revolves around whether or not John was guilty.
Yeah.
Cursor's mother believes John is responsible for Cursor's murder. And maybe like that he couldn't live with himself, right? But a detective did come out in 2009 and they said that there was quite a bit of evidence actually pointing away from John.
Yeah.
Some of the things they mention is the timeline. Remember, he would have had only 20 minutes to take her. You know what I mean? And he came forward the next morning.
Yeah.
It's not like he came forward days later. It was literally the next morning, first thing in the morning, right? The fact that he contacted the police as well, like we were just talking about, he's the one who put his – he went to police. It's not like they came to him and said, we saw you at the scene. He went to them and said, I saw her and she was talking to this creepo, you know what I mean, in a ute.
Yeah, yeah.
He wasn't the only one to have mentioned seeing her bleeding from a broken nose or jaw. These tips were received before this information became public. So he obviously called in the next morning talking about, you know, Cursor, he saw Cursor, she was bleeding, her face was bleeding. But a lot of other people called in the same tip. If she was bleeding at the scene, it would have been unlikely that there would be no blood found in his car. There were also six different eyewitnesses that saw a white truck that day, but the driver of the white truck never came forward for questioning. So it's like, who the heck was this guy?
in the white truck slash shoot. You know what I mean? They never came forward.
I often wonder, like, sorry to cut you off, but I often wonder that if this person in the white ute was real, obviously, because multiple people saw, but, like, maybe they weren't local because if people were, like, if the police were saying, oh, we're looking for this white ute, maybe he was not from the area and he never actually saw the report of her missing at the time and it just didn't, you know what I mean? Like, it just didn't get to him or I don't know.
The fact that they invested, I think it was like 800, like, utes though, I honestly don't know. I feel like it's sus that they didn't come forward. I feel like at some stage you'd be like, oh my gosh, did you hear a girl went missing in this area? And so the guy would be like, oh, I was in that area at that time. Yeah. I don't know. I feel like it would have made, and for New Zealand, New Zealand's a pretty safe place. I feel like this would have been pretty big in the news back then.
But then, like, what is the news in the 80s? Is it just a newspaper? You know what I mean?
Yeah, I'd say
it's not like TV. Today we're at TV.
Yeah, I reckon for sure TV.
That long ago. It's black and white TV.
Radio.
Yeah, I don't know.
I think for sure. And exactly, I think newspaper, radio, and TV would have been obviously your main three sources of information. And something local like that, it would have definitely made the news, especially for a little place like New Zealand and a 14-year-old girl missing.
Yeah.
So one of the witnesses remembers passing a white ute similar to the one described and could see the driver had wrapped his arm around the shoulders of a young girl in the passenger seat. See what I mean? Like, so it's not just John that's saying about this white ute. There's other people coming forward with similar descriptions of this white ute.
Yeah.
So that's, I mean, I'm not sure what you think. What do you think? So do you think there was a white ute involved or you think that it was completely now – it sort of muddied the case.
Yeah, see, I don't know what I feel. Like, I just, I don't know. I think the white ute was there, definitely. I don't think six people would have made that up. And I think the witness statements are pretty consistent enough to know that there was probably some bloke in a white car in the area. But you're not gonna like this, but I lean towards the swept out to sea.
Lucky, you know, I am very, what the heck? You know what's crazy? I'm very open to this as well.
Are?
Yes.
Oh my God.
And do you know what's crazy? All right, so this was gonna tell you, right? I actually think that guy that was doing the investigation, Ryan, I think this is what he thinks, and that's why he didn't continue with the investigation.
Yeah, yeah.
I just got that feeling because he talks about how many people contacted him regarding how dangerous that area was. And if people did see her if she had fallen off Commodore, she did have a bloody face, it makes sense. She thought, I'll quickly tie up Commodore and rinse my face so I can get home. Let's just say John did stop to talk to her. It makes me think maybe she just thought, oh, there is no way, like, this guy maybe is a little bit weird, like, he's a stranger, I'm obviously not going to get in the car with him, I'll tell him my parents are on their way,
are coming. Yeah.
Yes.
And because that's okay. something I also couldn't understand was that John had said to Cursor, you know, like, do you need help? And she said, no, my parents are on the way or something like that. And I always wondered, I'm like, did the mum and dad ever come forward to say that anyone contacted them?
No, you know no. No one did.
No one contacted them.
Yes, they were never contacted regarding, you know, she had fallen from her horse or she was injured or anything like that.
I also think it's possible that she didn't tie the horse up. I think that possibly maybe she, because you know how he was quite spooked by water, that maybe she just quickly thought, I'll quickly go down to the water and wash my face. And he got spooked. She got swept out to sea, someone saw this random horse, you know, wandering around and just tied it up. But then I also think that maybe that person would have come forward and said, hey, I tied up this horse.
But not only that, but how about the blood splatter that was hers right near where the horse was tied up?
Yeah, that's so she true.
She would have had to have been there.
Yeah. I mean, it's hard to tell.
Her blood was on the rope as well, sorry.
And she could have been in pain. Like, she could have maybe been in pain and there was lots of blood and she was a bit panicked. And that's maybe why she quickly tied him up by the bit, because she just needed to, you know, get down there and wash her face off.
Yeah.
Yeah. But I definitely don't think it's John.
I don't think it's John either, which is crazy. I really don't think it's him. I think it's either and this white ute thing. I'm in between. I'm 50-50. It's a white ute or she was swept away.
Yeah.
And it sucks because, I mean, if this happened nowadays, there's so much, do you know what I mean, like security footage and dash cams and like just to be able to get a few more answers.
Yeah.
So in 2009, Kirsa's mum, Robin, opened up her own therapy practice. She wanted to create a space where parents who had lost children to violence could come together, talk, and find support. The local community put up a memorial plaque and planted a – I don't know if you – I cannot say this. What is it? Pahutukawa.
Pahutukawa. Tree?
Yeah. So it must have a special meaning or a symbolism, which I actually should have looked into. I didn't. But this was planted where Kirsa was last seen. Unfortunately, little jerks in 2006 damaged the tree, like vandals. This just makes me infuriated. What do people
do? Yeah. Ugh.
So St. Augustine's Church in Napier, where Kirsa's dad was a minister, has a chapel dedicated to her. A trust fund was set up initially to help find Kirsa, and they asked the Massey University to manage some of the money for an award, and this award helps students entering their third, fourth, and fifth year of like doing their Bachelor of Veterinarian Science, because obviously that's what she was passionate about, and that's what Kirsa knew she was gonna be. You know, she had already put steps in place to become a vet.
Yeah, like they were saying, like, you know, if she couldn't be a vet, like, let's help someone else fulfill their dream. Kirsa.
So the detective in charge of Kirsa's case to this day is adamant that the case remains open. All Kirsa's mum wants is to lay her to rest. And I mean, I really hope that one day, very soon, she gets her wish. And I mean, there's still, if it wasn't the sea that took her, there is a possibility. You know what I mean? But
yeah.
Such a sad case. She's actually written a book. Kirsa's mum, I think it's called A Mother's Story. I couldn't get my hands on it because, you know, I've been doing the audio books. I could not find it. So, yeah.
In that book as well, she talks about when John Russell came to see her, and she talks about what he said. And he does say some really weird stuff, but I think he was obviously very mentally ill from everything that happened.
Yeah.
Yeah, it's covered in the podcast. He reads out like an excerpt from the book, and it's really odd. But yeah, it's very crazy. Do you know what I actually found out from researching this case, that I really loved is like in New Zealand, no case is like gets closed. Oh, like if there's no body. Yeah, it's always open, and every missing persons case in New Zealand gets reviewed yearly. Like, how cool is that?
I love that. I freaking love that.
Yeah.
Amazing.
Yeah. So, every year they look at Kirsa's case, and the detective that has the file at the moment said that they get about two or three, calls a year about it. Yeah. Still.
That is nuts. Absolutely nuts.
Very crazy one.
But, yes, so that is Kirsa's story. And quickly, sorry, before we go, I just looked up the other New Zealand case that I was talking about, and it's Jim Donnelly.
Donnelly, yes.
Yeah, episode 82, if anyone's interested. Yeah,
in that. And guess what? He lived in Auckland, New Zealand, Lockie.
Crazy.
Anyway, but yes.
If you have a case you want us to cover, you can send us a message on Instagram. Our Instagram handle is at Caffeine Crime and Canines, or you can head to our website and leave a request in the request box. If you want to support the podcast, you can leave us a 5-star review, head to our website to purchase some merchandise, or you can buy us a coffee at buymeacoffee.com/caffeinecrimecanines.
And until next week.
Until next week.
Bye.